Hey gang, if you're a musician in Austin that has to deal with pedals and amps breaking and having to get them fixed, I have a guy for you. That's Paul English over at English Electronics. He's the best guy in town for repairing pedals and amps, including older solid-state amps, guitar electronics, and other studio gear. English Electronics can also work with musicians and engineers to make custom devices. His custom pedals have been used by Billy Harvey on The Tonight Show on NBC, Charlie Sexton on Late Night on CBS, and many, many more. I use the English Electronics 4049 as my main boost and crunch pedal, and I love it. It gives my tone warmth while still packing the punch I need. You can visit English Electronics East Side Cesar Chavez shop by appointment only. Call them at 512-633-5106 or go to English Electronics on Facebook and make your appointment today. That's English Electronics. Get your stuff working. And you may ask yourself,
time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host, Johnny Howdy.
Alright, hello, I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you've all had a great week, whatever it is that you do during the week. If you work, or if you lead a life of leisure, or if you just walk around outside all the time. Tell you what, if you live in Austin this week, it's been a nice week to be walking around outside, unless you're allergic to everything, because everything is blooming. Literally. I think they just come on the allergy report now on the news and say, like, well, everything's going. You're all going to be coughing, wheezing, and sneezing to your heart's content, or until you explode from allergens. Anyway, I've been keeping up with my allergy medicine. It's not hitting me too hard. Every once in a while, I have a day where I'm like, oh, geez, take another Zyrtec, or maybe I didn't take the Zyrtec that day. I don't know. Anyway, allergies going crazy, but great weather. Nice, windy, and cool. Got the windows open today. Yeah, I do. It's a nice day. All right, I got a great show for you guys today. Anthony DaCosta, singer-songwriter out of Nashville. He lived here in Austin for a while, and he moved to Nashville. Told me he's neighbors with Steve Poltz. He's been writing songs with them. You might know Anthony. He's toured with Sarah Jarosz a lot. You know, she's pretty popular. She's won a Grammy and everything. Anyway, Anthony DaCosta released his album DaCosta Deluxe in 2017, which is just this past year. He's had quite a few releases, and they're all really great. You should get out there and find him at anthonydacosta.com. That's DaCosta.com. Anthony DaCosta. We have a great conversation when he was in town, I guess almost now, like 6 weeks ago or something like that. I know I've got some pileups of shows, like shows that didn't have any sort of deadline to come out, have just kind of sat dormant for a while. So this is one of them. It was great getting to meet Anthony. I've been trying to hook up with him for a while, and we finally hooked up when he was in town the last time. Had a great conversation. You will get to that. We'll get to that in just a minute. Before we get to my conversation with the great Anthony DaCosta, let me tell you what's going on with me. I had a great time this week. I went in and had dinner with Mark Hallman, who's mixing my EP, which, by the way, it's almost done. It'll be done by the end of this week, and I don't know when I'm going to start dropping tunes. I need to sit down and plan that once I have the tunes with some people. I need to sit down with some people and bounce some ideas off them, so that's what I'm going to do. I went over to Mark Hallman's house for dinner. I've been friends with Mark since I was 13 years old, and his wife, Kristen, I was separately friends with her before they even knew each other when I was like 16 or 15 when I lived here back in the mid-80s. And their friends, Tanisha and Philip. Anyway, we had a great, great time. Great dinner. Great time listening to music, talking about music. I feel like we talked a lot about music. I feel like me and Mark were the only musicians there. But we just talked about music we liked. We played music we liked. We talked about music we've made. I used to play with Mark when I was a kid. When I was like 16, I played with him. I don't know if I've ever posted on the How Did I Get Here Facebook page. I'll post it, but we were on this show. We played on the Austin City Limits soundstage, and it was like summer of 85. But I was on TV, man, wearing leather pants, white shoes, white patent leather shoes. What a weird-looking look that was. Anyway, so it was great having dinner with him and catching up, and, you know, he's very excited about this EP. I'm very excited about this EP. I can't wait to drop it on you guys. Also, did I tell you guys I have a new website, johnnygowdy.com? Just go there, check it out. It's got some music, links to music, bios, pictures, photos of the podcast, links for the podcast, all that kind of stuff. Wednesday night, I went out to Sun Radio has a concert series here in Austin under the Oaks, which are probably blooming, and we're killing a lot of people with allergies. But on Wednesday nights at 6 to 8 p.m., they do a concert series. It's live on the radio, on Sun Radio, solar-powered radio. One of the cool stations we have in Austin. Luckily, in Austin, we have a few cool stations that do cool things. It's a, you know, KUTX, you know that one? That's a big mother load. Does cool stuff constantly. Dropping the cool. Sun Radio, dropping the cool. Got Wimberley Valley Radio out there in the hill country. Dropping the cool. Always good, man. A lot of good radio stations here in Austin. Anyway, I went to their series that they have on Wednesday nights. It's a free concert series. And saw some music, hung out with my friend Einar and his son Vigo while my friend Einar played. Saw my friends Mid-Century, who were just on the show over the last month or so. Great seeing them play live, man. They dropped some crazy covers. That you know that Boz Gag song? That song that, not Lido Shuffle, but that other hit, almost like, no, I wonder what you do. They did that. They did like Sade. But their own original music was incredible. Their vocals were all great. They do four-part harmonies. Nice full band. Keyboard guy, Alex Chod from Wonder Bitch. It's guys from Wonder Bitch, but it's a different band, like Bruce Sings. Anyway, get out there and check them out, Mid-Century. Great band. I'll be heading to Houston today to play with Skyrocket at a private event. The only reason I'm laughing is I'm always going to Houston, aren't I? Skyrocket, we do a lot of work in Houston, man. I'm always like, hey, yeah, I'm going to Houston tonight. I'll be playing in Houston tonight. I'm playing in Houston tomorrow. I played in Houston last weekend. But we play there a lot. So we're playing a private function the day that this comes out, Friday. And then off for the rest of the weekend. Not sure what I'm going to do. Might go run around a little bit, see some things. Not sure. My car's in the shop right now. I had a fender bender. I had nothing to do with it. In fact, I was at my aunt's house hanging out for her birthday, and it was like somebody was moving a car and a thing and ran into mine and dented the car, but got that in the shop. It's getting fixed. What happens, you know, is you get this rent-a-cars too when they do that. I got this rent-a-car. It's got like 1,600 miles on it, right? That's like 10 times less than my car. So I love it. When you drive around in these cars and you get your car back, you feel like you're driving a jalopy. It takes like a week to get back, like normalize and have the feeling that you have like a cool car again. Anyway, I've been dealing with that, doing that, driving around this rent-a-car. Gonna go over and hang out with Taylor, my dog. And Sandy has a foster dog over there right now, this very cute greyhound named Sedona. I'll post some pictures on the How Did I Get Here Facebook page. Get out there and like it. Like the Facebook page, okay? You'll see a photo of me and my guest today, Mr. Anthony DaCosta. He lives in Nashville. You can find him at anthonydacosta.com. Great songwriter, great singer. His records are absolutely fantastic. His latest DaCosta Deluxe, a delight. DaCosta Deluxe is a delight. That's my review. If I was a reviewing guy, that would be my review. All right, here's me and Anthony DaCosta chatting it up. Let's get down.
Gosh, a couple of years, like a year and a half, probably like full on. I was there. I left there in April of 2016.
Oh yeah. Oh, and Sean played on my record. That's something I'm doing.
Really?
I'm making an EP.
Oh, cool, dude. Sean is the greatest.
He's the greatest, man.
Working with him. I mean, he's sort of the unofficial manager of that place, and working with him was a constant joy. If only to hear him do bits all day, like his he has a few things that he probably does once a day. One of them is teach a little kid and their mom or dad that ukulele is not that difficult, and he'll play Something by the Beatles on the ukulele for them. Yeah. And then he also has another bit where he does he's really good at doing what he calls his R&B riff or vocal run, where he goes like that. I can't even do it. I'll throw out my neck trying to do it.
McCabe's.
Yeah.
That's a place. Santa Monica, right?
Santa Monica. I just went for the first time a few months back.
So what do you, would you live here?
I don't live here. No, okay. But I'm here all the time, it seems. I moved away from here in August of 2016.
Okay.
But I was here for almost 3 years, and I've been making a point of coming back. Jeez, it seems like I've been back at least every, like, 2 months.
Maybe. So you live in Nashville.
I live in Nashville.
See, right, I now thought you were living here and playing there, like, every Wednesday. I was like, man, this guy fucking, man, he loves that residency.
Oh, no, well, the residency was, yeah. Oh, you mean, like, you thought I was living here and playing in Nashville?
I've seen people do weird shit like that.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, and we've talked about coming back and doing a residency. Like, I've talked about coming back and living here for a month and doing a residency here. But, yeah, the Nashville thing just kind of came together back then, but I've only started really spending more than 3-5 days at a time there, like, recently.
Because you're on the road all the time?
I was. Let me get rid of this cough drop. I was on the road all the time last year and the year before, which is part of why I couldn't work at South Austin Music anymore. Bill was really nice to sort of let me hop in and out whenever I was...
As you needed?
As I needed, but, you know, eventually you gotta, probably get someone who could be there more often.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was on the road in 2016 all year with a girl named Aoife O'Donovan, like an amazing singer and songwriter who from Boston originally, who lives in New York. She used to have a band called Crooked Still, which is sort of, they were known as sort of like a, I don't know, like some funny amalgamation of genres, like chamber grass, like kind of bluegrass musicians with but there's like no acoustic guitar. It was like cello and upright bass and banjo and a voice, and I was a big fan of them growing up in the Northeast and going to like folk music festivals. So I got to play with her in 2016 for her solo project, and then pretty much ran straight into a full-time gig with Sarah Jarosz for about a year.
Okay, yeah. Tell me about her. She's a Grammy-winning artist, and I know her name.
Yeah, Sarah.
Why do I know her name?
Well, you probably know her name because she's from around here. She's from Wimberley, and so she's sort of like a one, you know, pride of the area. She grew up in Wimberley, went to the New England Conservatory of Music, but even by then she had already been making records. She makes records for Sugar Hill or was, and she, yeah, just won her first two Grammys. A lot of people, I was touring with her when she won her Grammys. I was on the road with Aoife actually, but I'd started to play in her band, and we were all excited. We were like refreshing the winners page every couple of minutes to see what had happened. And but yeah, lots of people were asking me like, how does it feel to, you know, play with a Grammy winning artist? And I was kind of like, I mean, it's cool. People were like congratulating me basically, and I was just like, well, I mean, thanks so much. I literally had nothing to do with it. I couldn't have had less to do with it because I hadn't played on the record. But yeah, Sarah won two Grammys this year, about a year ago.
Okay,
the last ones.
Wow.
And so I played, I filled in her band for the last year of her tour.
I saw some nice video of you two playing and singing together, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's you two?
Yeah. Yeah. Was it one of my tunes? We did one of my tunes as a video.
I don't know. I'm not going to lie to you. I watched a lot of that stuff when you were going to come in, when I thought you were coming in a couple weeks ago.
I know.
Ago.
I screwed up my
You didn't do anything bad. Everything's good.
Cool. Yeah. There's probably a bunch of videos from when I was touring in her band, and then we... She was really kind enough to record with me for...
She sing on this record? On DaCosta Deluxe?
She does, yeah. Most of the deluxe part of the record has to do with these duets I did with Sarah. We took three of my tunes and re-recorded them in a duet, like sort of acoustic format. And so there are examples of that. Are you getting a call? Somebody important?
No.
Oh, cool.
No one's more important than you.
Thanks. Thank you so much. But
I'd be a great label president.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Or like totally. An A&R guy. I feel very taken care
nothing's more
of.
Important than you right now. And as soon as you leave, I'll be like, whatever his name is.
15 minutes.
Left.
Yeah. Somebody else. Yeah. No. We did a few duets together. So those are some of the deluxe tracks.
Hey, what song? I'm trying to think of. It's a beautiful song. Your record's great. You're a great songwriter.
Thank you. Thanks, John.
This record has this feeling of like, are you a Matthew Sweet guy?
You know what? I heard the name.
Do people ask you that?
Not often, no. I get some other ones, but not him.
Not like you do. You're like his cousin or something.
Okay.
Like you have a rock and roll, but they're like pop in the pop that I think of pop, like based in Beatle and Big Star kind of stuff.
Totally.
Yeah.
I'm all about that.
So where are you from? You're from the Northeast?
I'm from a town called Pleasantville, New York, which is a real place.
Isn't that a movie?
It was a
movie. Is that about that place?
It's not directly. I used to tell people, yes, everything's in black and white, and Tobey Maguire is our mayor now. But that bit got tired.
Patty
Griffin is. Oh, yeah. No, it's a. No, this is a. Tobey Maguire and Reese Witherspoon started the movie.
Right, I know you're talking
about. And we did not. While the movie is not based, or it's cooler if you say film, while the film is not based on our town, they did a special screening of it.
At your town?
In our town. We have like a little hip movie theater, but it's not a movie theater. Like I said, it's better when you say films. It's a film center, an independent film center in Pleasantville. It's right across the street from our village clock. But I was born in the Bronx.
There you go.
Like Jennifer Lopez. Yeah. And we lived in Valhalla, New York, which is, Viking heaven.
Yeah.
But actually just a suburban town about 40 minutes north of New York City. And then scooted over to Pleasantville. And those were my formative years were spent in Pleasantville, New York. 2 square mile village.
It's funny because you do have a name that is like, I have this like, every once in a while someone will hit me, like a comic will hit me to a word you can say that helps you. Like I discovered Snowmageddon helps you with your Jamaican accent because you can go Snowmageddon.
Ah, that's good.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anthony DaCosta helps you with your hey, anybody here seeing Anthony DaCosta?
Totally.
Where's he at?
Exactly.
I saw his sister yesterday.
Yeah.
Denise.
It's like if John Travolta was trying to find me, is what that sounded like. Yeah, well, it's funny because most people think DaCosta is an Italian name. It's actually
Spanish.
Portuguese. DaCosta, but it's tricky because my mother is Italian. So my father's family's from Portugal, and he was born in Yonkers, New York, which is just a wonderful place.
Is it? Or is
no,
he joking?
But he likes to say, just give them 300 years and they'll bounce back. And my mother was born, yeah, I know, he's funny. My mother was born in Rome and moved over here, like literally fresh off the boat, like the classic scenario with her family when she was 3 or 4 years old. And she grew up in the Bronx. So it's an Italian mom, Portuguese-American father, although his Portuguese was his first language. And he likes to say that he grew up in like the Catholic Church, and as did I, but they grew up going to Catholic schools. And this is Catholic schools in the 60s, like in the early mid-60s. So nuns were hitting people and shit.
They hit me in the 70s.
Really? Yeah. Oh, yeah. I bet that shit.
They struck me in 76.
Jesus. Bicentennial. Bicentennial
streaking.
Striking. Yeah. So he grew up, like I said, going to those schools and... He said the nuns used to hit him with rulers because they would give the class instruction and they would think he wasn't listening to them because they thought whatever he was just being difficult, but he barely spoke English. Like he actually didn't really speak English. So there was a misunderstanding. So he likes to say he learned English faster than anyone in history. He didn't want to have to like pad his buttocks with my grandfather's like extra wallets anymore. So yeah, it's my dad learned English real fast, and then they met in school at Fordham University, and X amount of years later they had me also like my sister and my
brother. What did your dad do? What was his
man?
What was his profession?
Funny enough,
outside of stand-up comedy.
Yeah, funny enough, my dad was a radio DJ.
Oh,
in
really?
College. He there's a station, a pretty well-known station up in New York called WFUV Radio.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and my dad was actually a DJ on that station all throughout college and started several, like he had like three or four different shows that he would host. He had a country music show called Let There Be Country. He had sort of like a rock show. I don't know if we were quite calling it classic rock yet. Probably not,
because it was in the 70s. Time that it was.
Yeah,
just,
exactly.
Zeppelin was in real time. Mm-hmm. It was real time rock.
Totally, the real time rock, right now rock, and current rock. And he also had a Celtic music show. So yeah, he was working there, and my mom was interning with the station, and that's kind of how they met. But he and
FUV is a Fordham station.
Yes, okay. Fordham University, the Bronx.
I got a
campus.
I got a lot of love on there when I had a big campaign,
dude,
CMJ campaign.
Totally. They're great. Like, they actually, I have a friend named John Platt who hosts the Sunday morning breakfast show there. And they are like super supporters of music and of the sort of the Hudson Valley and New York City music scene there. But they become like a tour stop. Like, you can't really go through New York without doing a session for FUV or maybe NYC. But yeah, and so, but they ended up, they both ended up going into the, they were communications majors, and they ended up going into the public relations world, but in the medical field. So nothing to do with music or anything. But my dad ended up doing all these like crazy stunts and jobs, like special events with different companies. Like, he was working with Purina, like the pet, I think Purina is a pet, mm-hmm. a pet food company.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were doing like sort of a Save the Animals event. And there, so there are all these photos of my father in his office with like the cast of Growing Pains, which is weird. Or like Dr. J, Julius Erving. My dad was working for Hershey's for a while, and they would, this is all shit they were doing in the 80s. Like, they, weird stunts. Like, for Hershey's, they had the world's biggest chocolate chip cookie, you know, with Hershey's chips or whatever. And they had like, you could, you know, dunk on Dr. J. You know, it was like this weird, like, so there's black and white photos of my dad with Julius Erving and like some like young guy trying to like dunk a giant cookie into a huge cup of milk. Like, just weird stuff. And he did this for years. They eventually,
what a cool thing, though.
Yeah, he called it his wall of fame. He's got it going on in his office there. But yeah, so they both ended up doing that, and that's kind of what they still do, just in various forms.
How did you end up like this with this music thing?
You know, I would say, like, we gotta get the coffee sips in there. NPR. I would say that it was a combination of both of their efforts. My father more with just the exposure to a lot of different kinds of music. My father, again, for being like a Portuguese American kid from Yonkers, is like, he's into a lot of Portuguese music, like fado music, but he's obsessed with bluegrass and country. And he's obsessed with early rock and roll. So he was
Americana. That's what he's
totally.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
like American.
Totally.
Shit.
Before they were even calling it that.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. My dad was digging.
Yeah.
In
not
too.
The style of music, but
yeah.
The
culture.
The style.
Yeah,
the culture,
style.
Americana,
yeah. Totally. Yeah, my dad, like, some of his proudest interviews he ever did for FUV were, like, back in the day with, like, Hank Snow, and he got to, like, go on Ernest Tubbs' tour bus. And
that's killer.
But he, we were driving around in, like, his, you know, like, pale blue Honda and listening to cassette tapes that he had made of, like, Elvis and Jerry Lee Lewis and Chuck Berry and... so there was a ton of that exposure. And then my mother comes in with more theater background. My mother did theater when she was a teenager. And she also very much loves like folk music in the sense of like Nancy Griffith. And she loves John Denver, Sunshine mm-hmm. on My Shoulder. In fact, when I was on tour with Sarah, we went by the Musical Instrument Museum in Phoenix, the MIM, they call it, which is like... basically a super wealthy guy, like, had this incredible collection of instruments and just started this place to like put all of them. And since they've collected a bunch more and they have these temporary exhibits and you walk through and learn about music from all over the world. But they recently had the guitar. They had like John Lennon's piano,
yeah,
you know, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But they had
the white piano.
Yeah, they had it at the Musical Instrument Museum. But they had the guitar that John Denver, he has that song, This Old Guitar. And it's like, and it's a guitar.
Like it's the old guitar.
It's the old guitar. It's like an old Epiphone Archtop that he had lost for many years and came back to him. And but I sent her a picture and she was proud of me for once. No,
you know, I have a small museum. That's Elliot Smith's set list. Like,
oh my gosh,
Elliot Smith's set,
oh
like
my
the
gosh.
One in front of his microphone.
From when? And from where?
From Houston.
Wow.
Because my tour manager worked at the show. And it was really funny because he worked three shows in a row at one place.
Yeah.
And got confused. And he handed me this telling me it was King's X's.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, oh, because you're friends with those guys. I got their set list. And I was like,
oh, man.
This is Elliot Smith's set list. And he was like, oh.
I don't know. The King X has a song called Independence Day. I mean, maybe they do. But, oh, my God.
Also, if you look on the floor there, mm-hmm. that is Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick's actual strap. Actually
that,
his.
That totally looks like his vibe.
No, it is.
It is his thing. Yeah,
it is. There's amazing. No, you can't adjust them. Like, they make them for him. There's just one.
How did you end up with that? Same guy? Same tour manager?
Different tour manager.
Hey, man, I thought this was Richard Marx's guitar strap. I know you like Richard Marx, right?
No, he worked with someone like, I can't, it was a modern rock band in like the early 2000s that was on tour with Cheap Trick. Cool. And he talked to their roadie guy, and the roadie guy was like, here,
great.
Give him this.
Amazing.
I also have a collection of picks from like John Stamos to Mike Campbell.
John Stamos? Was he gigging?
Yeah, he plays with the Beach Boys. He plays drums with them, but he has guitar.
Is that
picks.
True?
That is a true thing. That
John
is a
Stamos
real...
plays drums in the Beach Boys?
That's a real
like
thing.
Currently?
He does from time to time. Wow. Yes.
Amazing.
You might notice him playing the conga in the Kokomo video.
I'm going to go revisit it. In fact, I'm kind of bummed.
He's been doing it for years.
Yeah.
He's been doing it since like the 80s.
Not something that I ever caught on to, and I don't know why.
Stamos.
Okay.
Honorary Beach Boys.
Stamos on aux percussion.
Yeah. Okay, so sorry. Let's go back to this. So you sent her the picture of the John. You got the folk music from your mom.
Rock and roll and Americana, all that stuff from my dad. And then, and then my mother put a guitar in my hands. She made me sing in the church choir when I was 5. I sang in the church choir from the age of 5 to probably 14. So every week. And that's where I learned how to sing in harmony. And I was always coming up with like weird, like back then I was probably an alto, soprano, alto, you know, but I was coming up with all these weird sort of alto parts. And so that's kind of where the singing developed. And then she put a guitar in my hands, like a little, you know, toy classical guitar, probably when I was 8 or 9. And I graduated soon after that to my father's Yamaha fuller size classical guitar, which he played for about a week in the 80s and then decided that guitar lessons weren't for him. And I started going to these lessons. I had a guy named Rich who taught lessons at this little shopping center in Thornwood. And Rich was a rock and roller till the end. He was a relatively young guy. He would show up to our half hour lesson about 5 to 10 minutes late every time. He would be eating a bag of the Planters like peanuts, and then he would take me into the. We'd go into the back lesson room of this little music store that mainly sold like drum heads and clarinets, you know. And we'd go into the back, and he would sit me down, and he would show me some recording that his band had just made, because he had a band called Homesick for Space,
like the self-promoting
to like to literally a 10-year-old guitar student.
Hey, dig our new tune, man.
Basically, I mean, and they were kind of, it was kind of like Radiohead-esque, like what they were doing. And so he's already late. And Rich, if you're not listening to this, but if you are, I love you, man, because he taught me all the Beatles songs that I know, a bunch of them. He'd be late, and then he'd show me a song from his band or something he was listening to at the time. He called it musical appreciation time, and which would, again, sometimes include his own band. And then the last 10 minutes of the lesson, we would learn a Beatles song, because he knew that's all I really wanted to do. We started with the books. And to this day, I wish I was more classically trained on the guitar, but we would just dig into, like, hey, man, how do you play that riff in, you know, Paperback Writer or something, you know, which was a little later on. But, yeah. And then I like started playing in like basement bands in Pleasantville.
Do you ever notice on that recording, you ever listen to it on headphones? I don't know what mix it is, but there's one that you can really hear before they do all the big harmonies in Paperback Writer. You can hear someone going,
like, I've never noticed that.
It's real weird. Heard it, I could never not hear it again.
I believe it. That band had so many, they left so many wild things into those recordings. Really, and I'm not talking even about like Sgt. Pepper's and White Album, talking about, like, you know, even just like gags, like so many gag things ended up on the recordings, like in Girl, when the bridge of Girl and the background harmonies to John's thing is just tit 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 over and over again.
They're
saying tit. They're just saying tit 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 tit. And now I 100% believe that they left some things. I mean, there's also my favorite parts are listening to those early records and hearing where they're doubling the vocals, whether it's John doubling his own or Paul and John doubling together, and they're singing different lyrics. And, you know, it's, but, you know, nobody cared. You know, the song was there. Yeah, it was just great.
Yeah.
And then they're recording to tape and they've already done 90 takes.
Well,
whatever.
They also had to bounce that shit down. So, totally. Like, once they'd be like, oh, fuck, was that you checking your vocal in
there? Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. I didn't hear it the first time.
Yeah, it's fine.
Well, there's nothing we can do now.
But
I like how I made them sound just American. And,
yeah, yeah,
and,
dude.
And I made
bro.
I made George Martin whiny. Yeah.
Bro.
Man.
Yeah, like John's like, bro. Yeah,
bro.
Dude, what? Like, what? And George Martin's like, eh, you know, I just thought it'd be fine.
Oh, yeah, he's Gilbert Gottfried.
Yeah. But, yeah, so I don't know. Yeah, Beatles, all that stuff came in. Dylan. I got so into Dylan when I was 13. I found my dad had a vinyl. It's like the most it's like the least romantic vinyl find in terms of finding a Bob Dylan record at your father's, because it was a Bob Dylan's greatest hits
sure
vinyl. But
was it one of those ones where it's like the silhouette where mm-hmm.
his wild hair?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes, but I found that and I became pretty obsessed with him. I'd been playing with my basement band doing, like, I say basement because we actually practice in a basement. We were called first we had Riptide, and then we had Us and Him, great bands. But I started picking up an acoustic guitar. I bought the rack harmonica combo, and I started learning The Times They Are Changing, and I watched The Last Waltz, and I started going to open mics and like playing. I brought the median age of these open mics down pretty far. It was literally like a 13-year-old kid in like a funny, slightly oversized leather jacket playing Dylan and Neil Young acoustic covers, and then follow immediately
had a leather jacket
and immediately following me would be like a 63-year-old
right
retiree doing doing I Hope You Dance by Louie Ann Womack or something, you know, right. Followed by it was great, it was beautiful to be part of it. I still have a recording somewhere of me doing that first open mic in Pleasantville in a church hall and going into The Times They Are Changing, and the crowd started clapping because they recognize the song, you know. But it was really like false, you know. I don't know that I should have gotten that sort of approval so early on, because you know they clap for you like oh, I guess this is my tune now. I just started going to those nonstop, and that's how I kind of accidentally became a teenage folk singer, and I did that for years.
Did you play other places other than open mics, or did you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I started. I have this friend, Fred Gillen Jr., who's out there touring and jamming to this day, who is sort of a mentor of mine. I met him at that first open mic, and he brought me around to a bunch of other ones. I had another friend who had a database of open mics in New York, so I started traveling down into the city, playing places that like definitely don't exist anymore. I think like the downtown Uptown Coffee House. I went to the Sidewalk Cafe in New York. And did one. That's one of the ones where you draw like a lottery number. And I was like number 42 or something. Because one of the open mics, it starts at 5 p.m. and ends at like 3 in the morning. And but I did those. And then I started playing, like, I started to get actual quote unquote like gigs when I was like 14. I would do like 2-3 hour coffee house shows. I had like Coffee Labs in Tarrytown, New York, and the Peekskill Coffee House. And
were you making like bread?
Oh, tips. It's all tips.
But I mean, like, what'd you make? Like 40 bucks?
Yeah, sometimes more. I mean,
like 40 bucks, that's good for a 14-year-old kid.
Oh, dude, let me tell you, I was rolling it. Like the money that my parents had made me save all throughout high school of playing music, because, you know, you're living with your parents and you're in Westchester County and it's fine. We weren't rich, but I didn't need to be spending
like
my tip money.
County.
Yeah, it's now, we could have never bought a house there now, but my parents must have got in just before the boom. Now it's like people who are tired of Brooklyn, and like their startup has gone pretty well, and they're thinking of chilling out upstate. Let's go upstate, and they drive 40 minutes and they think it's upstate. But like,
that was just so a guy from New York attitude.
Yeah,
that like anyone in Texas listening is like, wow. The guy.
I know. I always felt like I had way too much anxiety to live here. I still do. Just
there is like an East Coast, almost like a Jewish dude vibe to you.
Everybody
is great.
Thinks I'm Jewish.
Yeah, me too.
Everybody.
I'm from Miami. Like I was born in Miami, but there's a sensibility and an anxiety that Texans just don't have.
Yeah, and you know. But it's weird being here because it's Texas and it's a bunch of hippies at the same time.
Yeah.
And but it, man, when I moved down here, jumping all over the place. When I moved down here, I remember the first time I visited New York after moving to Austin. This place changed me, man. Like, I went back and I got off the plane at JFK, and I remember just like getting in the elevator to go to the shuttle or whatever, and like immediately just sensing everybody's just like tension.
Yeah.
And thinking to myself, very like, people get angry when the elevator wasn't going fast enough, and people living underground and being mad at each other for no reasons and mad at themselves and not. I could feel it all in this way that I probably would have made fun of before, you know. Like, I actually thought, like, everybody, can we just chill out, you know? But this place will change you like that.
So wait a minute. So let's go back there. So you do the thing. How much did you save? Were you going to give me a number?
Oh. I was just, there's no,
Oh, I thought you were like, if it's you all knew gone how much now. I saved, and then you said you're going to be like,
it's all gone now.
$83,000. No, it was probably, like, holy shit.
I probably had like 25 grand saved up. That's fucking great. Yeah, and it's all gone now. I moved to New York City for school. I applied to all these, music schools, and then, and got into a bunch of, basically got in everywhere I thought I wanted to go. But at that point,
what's up there? Like, Eastman's up there in Rochester?
I went.
Did you go there? Well, that's more of a conservatory.
No, yeah, I went. Right. I went. I had applied to like Berklee College of Music in Boston, which I got into. But I at that moment, I'd visited there a few times, and I have tons of friends, especially now, who went there and who loved it. But I knew immediately that it was not. Like, going to parties there was just like a bunch of kids like, oh my God, you're so good. We're so good. This is so good. This is how I felt.
Yeah.
And I just kind of had this moment of like, I just wish somebody would talk about biology or anything, like literally anything other than
too
music
much
right
music.
Now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, I did my audition because you could actually major at this point in like being a singer songwriter at Berklee.
Right.
Which I'd already been doing for 5.5 years or something. But I was like, I don't know about this. I went in and played one of my songs, and the guy's like, that's cool, man. What if I did this? And he picked up like a Strat and started playing like, you know, 13th chords and wanted me to like scat. And I literally thought to myself, like, I scat for no one.
Yeah.
And there were a couple other places I got it, like NYU for music tech. And I went to a class there, and it was like, they were talking about circuits, and cause I could have been an engineer, you know?
But yeah.
I pieced out of that. I ended up going to Columbia University for history.
That's a good place.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good that you went in and got a little outside stuff. Yeah.
There was a fella who used to come around here sometimes named Jack Hardy, who was another songwriting mentor of mine, who, he used to call me Grasshopper. He was around in the 70s in the Greenwich Village scene, like kind of after Dylan left, but he kept it going, and he had this great thing called
the Cafe Wad.
Yeah,
that kind
like
of shit
Fast scene. Folk Magazine was his thing. Yeah. And a weekly songwriter meeting, and so I would go down there and play him tunes. And around the time I was applying to schools and choosing where I might want to go, which is what a fortune to be able to choose, he said to me, Grasshopper, you've spent years putting things out there. It's time to put some stuff back in. Which is his way of saying, like,
go learn some
get
stuff.
A liberal arts get, degree. Yeah. Yeah, get enough of this. So I did all that. But when I remember moving to New York City, and I had this like wad of cash from playing coffee shops and festivals and stuff. Because I had this thing going in the Northeast. It's like this like young kid who was playing, you know, playing shows with people 2-3 times his age and writing these songs. Like, you know, one guy came to a show of mine at the Club Passim in Cambridge, Massachusetts, in Boston, and said, I remember I got it was the only like terrible review I ever remember reading of one of my shows. And he said, there was something really sad about watching an entire room of adults listening to a 17-year-old sing about love. There's something very sad about that.
Nothing like, sad about that.
Like, what does he know kind of thing? Really angry freelance writer for the Boston Globe. Of course, my
who
one...
had not been laid in like 18 years.
Probably
at that
not.
Point. Yeah.
He also, he said about my friend who also played on the show to me, and I realized later that must have been the curmudgeon. He said, that set was worse than the Bush presidency.
Are those guys that are like, he's been dying to use that since the Bush presidency on someone for like he wrote
and
it
was barely over. In fact, we were still at the tail end. Anyway, so I moved to New York, and I was all excited to be out of my parents' house, but of course still like kind of in the world there. And I had all this cash, and I remember I was going on tour, and I had several different options. One option was I almost bought a car, which would have been the dumbest thing I could have done because I was living in New York City and I would have never parked it anywhere.
Right.
I almost got an apartment. Not bought, of course, but I was like, oh, maybe I'll move off campus next year.
Yeah.
Move in like a sweet apartment like near Columbus Circle.
Yeah.
And instead, I took a huge wad of that cash and made a record called Secret Handshake, which
genius.
Is still there. And was it the smartest way of spending? Like, because this was, I didn't do, you know, this was like, you know, sort of at the beginning of crowdfunding stuff. But
what year is all this stuff taking place?
This is like 2010. I'm like, okay. I just.
How old are you?
I'm now 27.
Okay.
I had just finished. Yeah. I'm starting to feel
life hasn't passed you by.
I'm starting to feel it.
I know. You can't even bowl.
I can't even bowl without
acupuncture the next day.
Yeah. Exactly. but yeah, I made this record called Secret Handshake, and I'm still super proud of it. I made it with a friend named James Frazee, and it's like the band is insane. It's like I got Brian Viglione from the Dresden Dolls is the drummer on it because we were buddies, and my friends Emily Brodsky and Anna Vogelsang sang on it.
Oh, Anna Vogelsang.
You know Anna? Yeah.
She was on this show.
Oh, fantastic.
Isn't she from the Midwest?
She's from Massachusetts. She lived in Madison for a while, went to school in Chicago.
Anna Vogelsang was on my show.
Oh, fantastic.
South by Southwest like 3 years ago
or
something.
Cool. Dude, Anna's the best. We just wrote a song together 2 weeks ago. But yeah, so I made that record, and it was kind of my first, like, because I made albums all through that period of, like, high school. Like, I made all these records that are, a couple of them I've taken down from the internet, but most of that journey is still available for people to hear. It's kind of funny to listen back to now, but that record felt like my first kind of, like, I'm an adult now record, which is bullshit, but it's...
It was for
I'm
that.
Really proud
it
of it.
It wasn't that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's the vibe with that.
So when did you move here?
I moved here in the, end of 2013, beginning of 2014 officially.
Okay, so you finished your schooling.
I finished schooling kind of barely. I was, when you go to a place like Berkeley, and I know that this is too general of a statement, you can sort of say, hey, I've got this tour that gets booked, and maybe your advisor will be like, hey, we'll work around it, you know, because they know you're trying to build your career. If you're at Columbia, a full-time, like, Ivy League is a sports distinction, but we'll throw in Ivy League.
It is an Ivy school. League school.
I know, but it's funny to me that it's technically started as a sports distinction. It had nothing to do with, I think, is what I've heard. When I was telling my advisor about these things I was doing, it was kind of like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, what are you doing? Supposed to be here.
Yeah.
I was trying to be a full-time student and a full-time musician at the same time. So I graduated in 4 years, but barely. And I thought about dropping out several times, and I thought about transferring here. The first time I came to Austin, South by 2010, after going down to Kerrville before that, but never been to Austin proper, I was like, man, I'm just giving up everything up there, and I'm moving here. These are my people. This is my place. And a friend of mine, I talked like really heavily about this, and I knew that it would greatly upset my parents, who had worked really hard for me to be able to go to college. So I forced myself to stay up in New York, and I also fell in love and all this stuff. But once that was all over, the love and the schooling, I hit the road with a Canadian band for 6 months. And then once that was over, I'd already given up my apartment in New York, and I just got in my Honda CRV and drove to Austin and stayed here for almost 3 years.
Who did you know here, like, when you moved here? Did you
so
who were the guys
people.
That you met? Were, like, guys that I might know?
Oh, definitely.
Music guys.
I think so. I mean, honestly, the main reason why I know about Austin, about the Kerrville Folk Festival, is a woman named Raina Rose.
Yeah,
you gotta know Raina.
She's been on the show with children. I had a Mom's That Rock show.
Nice.
With all kinds of women.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Those are my fake nephews, her kids. So Raina and I met when I was like 15, 16 at a music conference. And she was the one who's like, you got to come down to Kerrville, Texas and do this thing called the Kerrville Folk Festival. So when I was 16, I applied for their songwriting competition. It was like an excuse to go and check it out. And I won their songwriting competition.
Look at you.
Yeah, it was cool. It felt
I think really, I read that in your bio.
Yeah, gotta do what you can.
It's a legendary story.
It is. I mean, it's the people who have won it.
16-year-old kid winning it.
The list of people who have won that contest is pretty insane. And the people, even the list of people who didn't win is insane. Yeah, so I threw that festival, because tons of the Austin crew roll out to that festival every year. I made just like tons of friends. So by the time I moved here in late 2013, I was already playing in bands with like Carrie Elkin and with a guy here named Sam Baker. I was playing guitar with him. Rain and
he moved away, right?
Sam's still here.
Sam's still
here? Yeah. Uh-huh. As far as I know. Yeah. He should be here. Unless something just changed. But yeah, I was already in several different musical projects with Andrew Pressman, who is an amazing bass player. And yeah, I just knew tons. It was really that Kerrville crew and just tons of like really good friends and music supporters who don't even jam, you know, like my friend Leanne, who I'm going to go see for acupuncture in like an hour. Like I'd never felt in New York City that what I always said about playing music in New York is that New York's great. It means a certain something to be able to play music, play shows in New York. Because when you're in New York, how I felt was everything's so close together. Somebody hears you play a song at a club, like I was playing like The Living Room or something, or Rockwood in New York. You know, they could walk in, listen to you play for a song, and if they don't like it, they can leave, walk next door, go see something else. And they might. And so I always thought, man, if I could get people to stay in the room in New York, that really means something. But the problem with being a musician, I think, in New York, and things have been changing, and there's a new scene there that I sort of left before it really started to take over. But to me, it was what an amazing group of musicians in New York, and I had all these friends who played music, but I think to be able to make rent in New York and to be able to just sort of survive and keep a career going, you have to have blinders on to a certain extent. So I kind of, especially after traveling down here, I would go back up there and immediately miss the sense of community that I felt like existed in Austin.
Right.
So I struggled with that a lot when I lived there, like not feeling, and I was putting on shows and doing what I could, but feeling as though, yeah, New York City was like a city of like, just got to keep your head down and do whatever you can and make rent. Here, I came down here and it was just this immediate like explosion of like loveliness and beautiful weather and beautiful people who like we would all, you know, we were all going to each other's shows. We were all writing together. I was in all these different projects kind of immediately. And I just feel like this city fosters some really amazing creativity and really amazing songwriting. I feel like the emphasis on songwriting in Austin is crucial to the sort of vitality of the scene. You know, I felt like, you know, I felt this really, just the tradition of the Texas songwriter was something that I immediately grasped onto. So yeah, and now I'm in a weird kind of blend of both of those things I just talked about, which is Nashville.
Right.
Yeah.
So what, obviously Nashville, are you doing, did you move there to get like, I mean, do you, because your songs seem like people would do them.
Is that
what you want, or what do you what do you want out of this?
Well, a couple things, which is both a blessing and a curse, because when you're obviously, like, I think my main thing that I've always wanted was to be able to play my songs with a band that I like in front of people.
Do you play with the band?
I do.
Because it's the DaCosta Deluxe record. That's a pretty rockin' record.
It's pretty rockin', yeah. And I made that here in town. And I produced
it. Did you produce it?
I produced it myself, and I made it here in town with an engineer named Grant Johnson. We recorded it at the church house, David Boyle's place.
That's where I work.
There you go, yeah.
That's where I just finished.
Fantastic. Oh, right, with Sean. Yeah.
Sean.
That studio is great. And I made that record with Wayne Salzman on drums, who was playing with Eric Johnson for the past few years. Andrew Pressman's on bass. We had a ton of amazing.
What bands is Andrew? I know that name. I feel like he's been on the show. Has he?
I don't know if he's
I feel been, like I've said yeah. like Andrew Pressman and so and so from this band.
He's married to Raina, which is his first and foremost what's most important about him.
Very famous.
He plays with Raina Rose. He's played with like so many of the songwriter friends that we have here in town. He played with Ben Queller for a little while.
Like that guy.
And yeah, and now he mainly plays in a band called Cary Illinois with Lizzie Lehman.
Oh, that's how I know him.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And yeah.
All enough yeah. said.
Cary Illinois and also a band called Nancy and Beth.
Are you friends with Daisy?
Yeah,
there was a thing that reminded me that your sort of delivery
Oh yeah,
can be very Daisy. Mm. Like just you know,
friend. Yeah. Yeah, Daisy's awesome.
Yeah, she's awesome,
and she's made a record with a similar crew. Yeah, so we sorry, I'm rambling, but the question about oh yeah, Nashville. What do I want? So yeah, what I'd like to do is be able to make a living playing my songs. What I've realized and have realized over many years is that people love to talk about, oh, we don't know what's happening with the industry, it's changing, this and that, Spotify, it's all terrible, it's all great, whatever. For me, it's like, I know that I have to diversify. And over the past few years, what sort of happened is a sort of happy accident was I ended up getting called more and more to be a side person, to play guitar in other people's bands, sing harmony in other people's bands.
You get paid.
Yeah. So that's how I've made rent for the last few years, is doing that. It's great. I do miss playing my songs. Sure. And so I've done it all along, but not much touring. So part of why I moved to Nashville was to focus a lot more on songwriting again and focus a lot more on being able to do my own tours. And it's that classic thing. It's just so much more centrally located than here. I made tons of records and had a great time and developed my sound.
I like that this is actually in the middle of the United States, kind of, but I know what you mean.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, for me, it's like the when I was in Austin, I developed my sound, mm-hmm. like my kind of like me now sound that I have with this trio thing that I do. And I made a bunch of records, but my music barely left this city for 3 years. And so moving to Nashville, I've already been able to go out and do tours, you know, more easily.
Yeah.
And, but what I also do there a lot now is co-write. I co-write with a lot of friends. I've written about a dozen songs with my friend, Steve Pultz.
It's my friend too.
Yeah. There you go. Steve's been on the show. I saw him on your list. Steve and I have written a bunch of songs together. A bunch of those are going to be on his record that's coming out.
No shit.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, I've been... So the co-writing thing has mostly led me to... You know, there are some people who are recording the songs that we've written together, but excuse me. I'm also very interested in publishing and getting tunes out there for other artists.
You don't... Yeah, is there anyone... You talking to anyone? Mm. That was the most intense sip I've ever seen anyone.
I know.
Take.
Well, I was nervous about coughing on the pod. I've been talking to anybody. Yeah, I'm talking to all sorts of.
Because
I'm dying.
You're the kind of songwriter. Like, if I was a guy that worked at like Warner Chappell or some shit, I would get your number.
Yeah,
I would hang out with you. I'd go have drinks with you and kind of figure out what your thing is, at least, because you're really, really good.
Thank you, sir. Well, maybe you should be working at Warner Chappell.
No, I would be terrible.
I am talking to people, and
I would use the expense account up like in a week. You and I would. We'd go to a place.
Exactly.
And, like,
no one's more important than us.
Yeah.
Okay, so you got a manager. Sorry about that.
Yeah, and I've been I'm having a coughing explosion. They're demons. I've got a lot of demons, Johnny. I we're also working on my my next record, which I put out two albums last year, but they were things that I had recorded sometime before. My collaborative album with Adam Levy.
Right. Yeah, listen to that. That's really good.
Thank you. It's a special project we did. We had never made music together before that session. We did the session in Austin, actually towards the end of 2015. Mm-hmm. Finally came out this past year. And then the deluxe version of the DaCosta album. But the record we're working on now has been years in the making in terms of the songwriting, and I'm very excited about it. We have a bunch of demos made. The record's being produced by a fella named Kenneth Pattingill from the band The Milk Carton Kids. You know, you should check them out. They're a fantastic duo, originally based out of LA, but Kenneth lives in Nashville. And so we co-wrote a lot of the songs together. We're hopefully going to be recording that very soon. I just did a residency in Nashville with my band there, which is just me and bass and drums. That's always been my favorite format of my music, to play. And, we're working on that. And so the goal is to be doing a lot more of my tunes, but I also just started a new, project with a woman named Joy Williams. Joy has a band called the Civil Wars for years. One of the best singers. I've just the privilege that I've had of as an accidental side person
Working with these amazing singers.
I have this, I've had the luck of playing with specifically these amazing female singers, Aoife O'Donovan, Sarah Jarosz, and now straight into playing with Joy. Joy is a monster singer, and she's got these really good new tunes, and I think it's going to be something that fans of hers are going to enjoy a lot. And so that record is being produced by Kenneth, and we're all working on that together. I'm playing guitar and singing harmony with her.
That's great.
So that's kind of my deal back in Nashville right now, is we're getting ready to record that record, and then we're going to eventually get into the studio for mine and keep co-writing with people. And you know, I don't do like a ton of session work in Nashville. I don't play on Broadway. I don't do a lot of the classic Nashville kind of musician things yet or at all. But I have had the pleasure of like digging into a community of really amazing musicians that, you know, Austin is, I think, will always be my favorite place.
There's good.
But there's something happening there that's special. It's a lot of young, like I'm finally at the age where I'm realizing that there are people who are younger than me.
Yeah.
Johnny, I don't know when that happened for you, but it's happened to me right now. There's so many like amazing like songwriters and players like in their early mid-20s who are blowing my mind. So yeah, to be part of that there right now is really special. So I'm finally, after being gone too long for the last couple of years, I'm finally digging in there and feeling good about being there for a while.
So, that's amazing.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
That's kind of the vibe.
Congratulations.
Thank you, sir.
How often do you get down here?
Man, I'm here like lately it seems every couple months. I think I was here in September, November, December, and you know,
now early February.
Yeah. So I I always find excuses to come through. I made this the first stop on a tour I did in December. We played the Saxon. Whenever I come through, it's always either the Saxon, the Cactus Cafe, or radio, coffee and beer. And I often just treat it as an excuse to see my friends. And
yeah.
And yeah, so I'm here every 2 or 3 months.
I'd love to, like, next time you're down, I'd love to write a song with you.
Let's do it.
I really love your work. You can come over here. We can record it and do the whole thing.
Thank you. I would love to. This is a great spot.
Yeah, you're a great, great songwriter, and I love your sensibility. Now, you produced that record, and I like everything about the production of it. I thought was cool as shit.
Thank you.
It's raw, but it also has like some cool feedback guitar shit.
Oh, and yeah,
all
the
stuff I like. Yeah,
that's my vibe. It'll be interesting making this this record with Kenneth. I was told at one point that I'm not allowed to do any of my own overdubs. So you know, you might hear a different side of me then. But yeah, that I'm glad you like that record, because I'm really proud of that, how that came out.
You should be.
Thank
you. That's a really great record.
Thank you.
I'm looking forward to seeing whatever you do next.
Heck yeah, man. I'll keep you posted.
Please do.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you're always welcome back. Honestly, like, cool. Let me know, like, give me a heads up, and we can make a song.
Great. Perfect.
Is there anything I'm missing? People can find you at anthonydacosta.com.
Yeah, Anthony D.A. Costa.
D.A.
I've been struggling with that lately, or some people have been struggling with that.
Oh, you played February 4th at radio. Oh, you played Sunday?
I did. Yeah, I had a little gig there over there. It was super mellow. Super Bowl. I mean, it was on the Super Bowl.
Videotaped you.
Yeah, she did.
And it was a thing, and I'd just gotten home from being in the studio with my friend Gabe.
Uh-huh.
And I saw it, and I listened to it, and I wrote on her thing. Who is that?
He's got a great voice. I think I saw that. Yeah, yeah.
And then I realized the next day that it was you. I was like, oh, shit, that's right, because you did Super Bowl Sunday show.
Yeah, it was honestly a complete accident. I have two friends who have birthdays this weekend, who just had birthdays. And so I was like, perfect excuse to come to Austin. Found a ticket on Miles. And then I should play a gig, you know, whatever. Yeah. I always think that. And I hit up Jack at radio, and he's like, I mean, yeah, the 4th is free. .. And that was kind of it. I was like, great, let's book it. And it took me like a week to realize that it...
But there's some other people on that bill, right?
It was my friend Aaron Huff. So the guitars that I play are actually Collings guitars. Uh-huh. And they're made here in Austin. And Aaron is one of the like amazing luthiers over at Collings.
Oh, really?
But he's also an amazing songwriter. And he's finally starting to... I've basically been prodding him to do gigs with me, and he's finally starting to play more and more. So he kicked off that night, and it's really amazing to watch not only Aaron sing his songs, but to watch somebody play who has basically designed all the guitars that they're playing.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And yeah, so Aaron played, and then me and John Green played as a duo. John Green's my Austin drummer, tried and true.
You're a lucky amazing man.
I know. John Green on the drums. Hashtag John Green on the drums.
That guy is really masterful.
Exactly.
Well, so are you, man. And it was really nice getting to meet you and talk to you. And I'm sure I'll see you around.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Nashville guy, Anthony DaCosta. He's living out there in Nashville. It was great to sit down and talk to him, man. That guy's a really talented guy and a great, great hang. Great getting to talk to him about the old times at the South Austin Music, playing here in town, learning about his new life over there. He's writing with Steve Poltz, the great Steve Poltz. Need to get him back on the show. Anyway, Anthony DaCosta. Find him at anthonydacosta.com. Find him on tour. Find him maybe coming back to Austin if you live in Nashville and you have not heard him yet. Get out there and see him, because he's absolutely fantastic. There you go. Anthony DaCosta. Find him at anthonydacosta.com. And while you're out there on anthonydacosta.com finding out about him, you can go and subscribe to this podcast on the Apple Podcast app, on the iPhone Podcast app, the Android Podcast app, Stitcher, TuneIn, Overcast. And of course, we are now available on Spotify. Subscribe on there or follow us on there and you'll get a new show every Tuesday and every Friday. All right? Let's hear some more music from Anthony DaCosta from his album DaCosta Deluxe. This is Talking to You. Have a great day, whatever it is you're doing. Let's get down.
Facing the wall, I'd sit and stare. wondering exactly how or where I'd make it. Then another came around, and we drove around the town, and the heart was so the chill, you could not break it. But it was a dream, it wasn't true. What do I do?